Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Look around you on the highways, and you may see them. Older Americans in campers, RVs, vans, living on the road, nomads, traveling for work, finding short-term seasonal jobs to make ends meet. Not homeless, exactly, but close. Houseless, they like to say. My guest today, Jessica Bruder, immersed herself in this world and chronicles it in her new book, Nomad Land. This hour, On Point, American seniors driven to the road. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this you? Could it be one day? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Why are they out there? Here's Bob Wells. He's a so-called work camper, van dweller, also runs a website and blog about the most economical and efficient ways to live in a car, van, or RV. He told Al Jazeera that the government safety net isn't enough anymore as a sole source of income for retirees.
I hear from a lot of people who have just retired on Social Security, and their Social Security, especially women. A lot of women who just retired with Social Security, their Social Security is $500, $600, $700, $800 a month. And in the U.S., you can't live on that. You can't rent an apartment and live on that.
So many are out on the road. Here's Sheila Souter. She and her husband both retired. They travel the country in an RV, picking up seasonal work everywhere from New York, New Mexico, to Kentucky, to Maine.
You always are looking for a job. You're looking for your next job.
There's jobs everywhere for people that live in RVs and are willing to move around.
Where does it end? Here's Alan Christensen talking with Al Jazeera, saying he sold his house, now just travels the country, sleeping in his van.
I don't worry about a lot of the things I used to worry about. And the only concern now is someday I'll get too old to do this.
And then what?
And then I might be moving in with family members.
He lost his business. He lost his savings. And at an age where he might not have expected it, out on the road there. Joining me now from New York is Jessica Bruder, author of the book Nomad Land, Surviving America in the 21st Century. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. She spent a lot of time on the road with this population of Americans. Jessica Bruder, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Who are your nomads?
Who are my nomads? Well, you just heard from a couple of them. Actually, Al is somebody I met back in 2013 when he'd been pushed out of the ad industry where he was a creative director. Bob Wells used to work in a Safeway as a union clerk, but when he'd got divorced, he really couldn't afford to support two households anymore, and he was a dad. He ended up living in a box van that he parked right outside that Safeway. So it's those people, but gosh, it's so many more. I met people all over the place out on the road. I drove 15,000 miles on this book project from west to east and north to south. And yeah, met a lot of really interesting people.
Characterize them. Broadly, what's the population you're writing about and why are they out on the road?
Primarily, well, the population I'm writing about are people who are at or nearing traditional retirement age. And they're not the only people out on the road, but they're out there in great numbers. And so many of them are facing just the perfect storm in terms of our economy between the outfall of the Great Recession, from which many of them will not have time to recover because they were approaching retirement, and many lost homes, experienced foreclosures, lost their 401ks or other savings in the market collapse. Many try to go back to the traditional workforce and they find ageism, where they find that low wages, our federal national minimum wage, sorry to be redundant there, but the federal minimum wage is currently $7.25, which is not enough to live on, and housing costs continue to rise. So for a lot of people, the only way to make ends meet was to cut out what is for most Americans the biggest expense, which is traditional housing.
So cut out the housing cost, but you still got to make a living. They go on the road. Describe the variety of vehicles that you found them in.
So many vehicles. I mean, I met everybody from a gentleman who's a former potter who used to throw thousands of pots till his thumbs gave out and is living in a converted salvaged Prius.
Prius.
A Prius.
I hope he's short.
He's living in a Prius. He is lanky and tends to use the passenger seat as this amazing prep work table, and the base is actually his old table from when he was making pots. It's a really gorgeous old piece of wood. Lots of people living in vans, like Bob, who we heard from. Mm-hmm. Everything from camper vans to homemade conversions to just, you know, you name it, it's out there. To travel trailers. The main character I wrote about in the book is named Linda May, and she'd been living in a trailer that was, gosh, maybe 10 feet long inside and 5 feet 3 inches tall. She called it the squeeze in.
Mm-hmm.
To secondhand RVs. So there's all sorts of rigs out on the road.
And what kind of jobs are they taking and where?
So many different jobs. I mean, this is one of the first things that just blew my mind when I was looking into this group of people. I'd initially heard about Amazon having a program called Camper Force, which is a dedicated labor unit hiring RVers. Amazon contracts with the RV parks near the warehouses, and they bring in people to do pick and pack, which is basically they have so much to do in the months leading up to the Christmas season. It's a huge commercial peak, mm-hmm. and they need extra people, and they tap that labor pool. This demographic also does a lot of campground hosting. The National Forest Service contracts with concessionaires who hire them to work as campground hosts, which sounds like a quaint job, but also just involves cleaning toilets a lot, dealing with rowdy campers, shoveling out fire pits, telling people to keep quiet during quiet hours. They also guard the gates to oil fields in Texas. They sell Christmas trees at roadside stands, or depending on the season, they sell pumpkins and fireworks. They guide tours of fish hatcheries. And I recently saw an ad asking people, how do you feel about the care and feeding of llamas? And that was targeted at work campers, too. So really, if you imagine it, it's probably out there.
Work campers. And this is a term of art. I mean, this is how they get described, or maybe how potential employers reach out to them. And so they're on the road if we see them out there, and they've, figured something out on the internet, and they're headed for that job, loading Christmas trees or working in Lamb House, Amazon warehouse, you name it?
Absolutely. I mean, so many of the applications happen on the internet. There's a whole website dedicated to hiring RVers for the annual sugar beet harvest, which somewhat cloyingly they advertise as the unbeatable experience. I mean, this is 12-hour days out in the cold bringing in crops of sugar beets, which basically you feel like you're shoveling bowling balls with an agricultural scoop and your body hurts at the end of the day. So I don't really know what's unbeatable about that experience, but mm-hmm. they're out there online advertising it.
You worked in some of these places yourself at a sugar beet processing place at an Amazon warehouse, and you wrote, "I felt like I was wandering around post-recession refugee camps among your nomads there, I guess." Another moment you said, "I felt like I was talking to prison inmates." What do you mean?
Yeah, well, it's funny. The prison analogy actually didn't originally come from me, but it came from some of the people I spoke with who were working at Amazon. And I think what they were referring to was just the regimented nature of the work. I mean, you clock in, and at least in the warehouse where I spent a week, there are walk paths that you stay on. There are murals on the walls that say things like "variation is the enemy" and "problems are treasures." In the bathroom, there's a chart for you to compare the color of your urine to these different color swaths to determine if you're adequately hydrated. So you really do feel like you're part of this large structure of control, and you're just kind of getting shunted around by it all day. So I think that's where that analogy came from.
And the post-recession refugee camp? Are you talking about RV and camper camps where you're seeing people sort of take their rest at the end of a day?
Yeah, I mean, so many of the people I met when I was interviewing folks who were working at this RV camp, they were working for Amazon, but Amazon had contracted with the camp and they were staying there. I remember one gentleman, when he first got there, after taking to the road because his house was underwater and he just never thought he'd get out from under that, had planned to retire on a sailboat with his home equity. Obviously did not work out so well for him and his wife. They ended up working for Amazon, and he told me, basically, when I first got here, I said to my wife, "This is a whole band of housing refugees. This is crazy. Like, this is where everybody ended up." He felt like he'd woken up inside the Matrix.
What is this? Is it freedom? Is it serfdom? Is it fun? Is it terrible? I mean, to be of a certain age and loading around sugar beets, that's, in the cold, doesn't sound like most people's idea of golden years.
Yeah, that's not a good time. I can tell you that because when I took that job, I was 37 at the time. There were obviously people much older than me also working on the ground crew. And I just remember every time a semi-truck came in to disgorge a multi-ton load of beets in the hopper, there was inevitably spillage. And our overseer was up in this glass control booth, and it was insane. It felt like some sort of sci-fi dystopia. She would hit a klaxon that sounded like she was arming the nuclear submarines, point to one side of the machine, and that meant we all had to run over there as fast as we could and shovel the beets, some the size of basketballs, back into the hopper.
This is including seniors, not 37-year-olds like yourself at the time.
Correct. Correct.
Who had driven a long way for this job.
Yes, for the honor of shoveling the beets, yep.
So, but on the other hand, we glorify life on the road. So do they think, wow, we're free or we're in trouble?
All of the above. I mean, it's a really mixed bag, and that's one of the reasons I'm really glad I got to deal with it at book length, because it's really complicated and there's a lot of nuance. A lot of these people could also be stuck in really terrible and sometimes maybe dangerous housing, doing, you know, minimum wage jobs till they die and be completely miserable, and they've made a choice. I mean, it's not that they had a great palette of options to choose from, but there is something empowering in saying, I have an option and I'm going to do this. So on some days, it does feel like incredible freedom and just the ability to pick up and go. And on other days, I think that freedom is also something that can make you incredibly vulnerable. It's easy for employers to exploit these people. And, you know, you can often be one broken axle away from what is actual homelessness. You know, these people call themselves houseless. But, you know, when the car goes bad, you got a big problem.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Americans, older Americans generally, living on the road, pushed by necessity, often nomads looking for work and a way to get by, to survive in a fairly sometimes unforgiving economy. Jessica Bruder has spent a lot of time on the road with people doing exactly this. She's out with a new book, Nomad Land, Surviving America in the 21st Century. You can join us this hour. Is this you right now, sleeping in Walmart parking lots and out-of-the-way campgrounds? Did you lose a house or savings or just wanted to get on the road? Did you need to get out there and wander to find work? Have you thought of it, moving into the camper, hitting the road, heading out to look for work and a better life or a way to get by, escape the mortgage, the rent? Do you see these nomads in your community? Do you recognize them for what they are and what they're up to? Here's a little tape from Walt and Kelly Gunn, live full-time in an RV, and they talked to CNN Money parked outside of an Amazon warehouse just outside of Reno, Nevada. They were there for seasonal work.
It's far more economical to live this way than it is in a stick house.
Just insurance alone and taxes on property and so forth.
You kind of hear what drove them there. Here's Chris and Leanne Pentico. They live in their RV. Went there after medical debt forced him into bankruptcy. Reporter Jacqueline Allen with the Denver, Colorado television station KMGH talked with him.
For the Pentecos, this life is more practical. Leanne is a retired Aurora school teacher, now caring for Chris full time. They lost their home after the bankruptcy and now live on his Social Security disability, $1,500 a month.
Do you worry about the future financially?
Oh, yes, I do, every day.
They're not alone. New statistics show most U.S. households are heading for a worse lifestyle in retirement than they had while they were working because they simply aren't saving enough.
Yeah, we were finding a lot of elderly, older people living month to month in these little tiny trailers.
And that's the life that Jessica Bruder writes about in Nomad Land. Employers happy to have them. This is Paul Pace, Director of Operations at Amazon's Fulfillment Center there in Reno. He told CNN Money's Casey Wyand that the e-commerce giant's Camper Force program attracts a lot of older, nomadic workers for temporary seasonal work. Amazon welcomes it.
So you'll see campers here at night, you'll see campers here in midday, and you'll see campers here in the very early morning.
We wondered if older, semi-retired workers could be as productive as their younger counterparts in fast-paced, demanding jobs like these.
Well, I'll tell you what, we bring them back every year. We want them to come every year, and we're trying to grow the program as much as possible. That, I think, is a testament to how much we want them here in the building.
Amazon, we love these nomadic Americans, American nomads, and of a certain age. Nomadland is Jessica Bruder's book. Wow, that's hard work, isn't it, in the warehouse, the Amazon warehouse, especially for older Americans? You put in a lot of miles in a day walking up and down those towering aisles of stuff to be shipped out.
You better believe it. I know one gentleman who's in his 70s and at his most recent Camper Force posting was doing 15 miles a day easy.
Can you take us through some of the circumstances that put people on the road in this way, turn them into at 50 plus or 60 plus or 70 plus or older, turn them into American nomads? Why, Jessica?
Sure. I mean, it's really a wide range of things. So the woman I follow through most of the book is actually just somebody who's perpetually been in the low-wage economy. She's worked hard all her life, had
Linda
a variety May. Of jobs.
Cocktail Correct. Races, waitress, trucker, insurance worker.
Defeatherer of quails and hunting lodges. I mean, just you name it, she's done it. And as she got older, even though she had amazing experience as a project manager at Home Depot, she started getting register jobs and the shifts were infrequent and it was hard to make ends meet, even though she lived in a pretty inexpensive fixed trailer. It was, I think, $600 a month. Mm-hmm. And she realized because she'd never been able to put away stuff for retirement, never had a pension, never had a 401k, that her future was really just on this low-wage treadmill until the day she died. And that was terrifying. I mean, her Social Security was around $500 a month, not even enough to pay that meager rent. And she needed to do something differently. And that's how she ended up taking to the road, starting working for Amazon, becoming a camp host, and hoping that if she could keep her overhead down, that someday she'd be able to buy a piece of land, a little scrap of something to call her own, and homestead.
You write about in North Dakota, this former San Francisco cab driver, 67 years old, now working in the sugar beet harvest, sleeps in the van that has been his home, you write, ever since Uber squeezed him out of the taxi industry. And another guy, 66-year-old general contractor, or was, stowing merchandise in the overnight shift at an Amazon warehouse. Working in a tiny trailer at one of several mobile home parks that contract with Amazon to put up nomadic workers like her. Did you find people who had lost their homes? They don't like the term homeless. They
Yes.
like houseless. Houseless by
Yes.
choice or something else?
They like houseless because it implies some agency. And choice implies agency, too. It's just when people say choice, you've got to think about what the other options were. Choice can mean very many different things. And in some ways, I think it's this talisman for agency, a way of saying, I chose this, I'm not a victim. But choice becomes a lot more complicated when you think about what the actual choices are and how that agency could be constrained by circumstance. So I did meet people who'd lost their houses. I met people who lost businesses, too. There was one fellow who used to have a business hauling scrap metal, and then commodity prices went up, and suddenly people just wanted to haul their own scrap. They did not want to pay somebody else to do it anymore. So it's just all sorts of factors getting people out there. Again, lost 401ks, lost savings, lost homes. Some younger people who were either just getting crushed under student debt or were afraid to take on student debt and go to college because they said, what's on the other side of that for me? Jobs are tricky to get where you're – I mean, even though employment figures might be looking better lately, the quality of jobs by and large is still so low. And again, just having our minimum wage at $7.25, it's insane. So I think a lot of people were looking for ways to opt out of the system.
Americans, many of them seniors, giving up, Jessica Bruder writes, in a nomad land on traditional houses and apartments to live in what some call wheel estate, vans, secondhand RVs, school buses, pickup campers, travel trailers, just plain old sedans, cars. You write, they are driving away from impossible choices that face what used to be the middle class. Decisions like, Would you rather have food or dental work, pay your mortgage or your electric bill, make a car payment or buy medicine, cover rent or student loans, purchase warm clothes or gas for your commute? And you say, for many, the answer may seem radical at first. You can't give yourself a raise, but what about cutting your biggest expense, trading a stick-and-brick domicile house for a life on wheels? The new book is Nomadland. Melissa is calling from Deerfield Beach, Florida. Hi, Melissa. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about being a younger person living this nomadic life. I lived on the road for 3 months and just recently got back to my hometown in Deerfield Beach, and I'm currently driving my van right now where I lived for 3 months. And there was a lot of times where I would trade nothing to for that freedom, but there was a lot of earth-shattering moments really trying to figure out what you're going to do. Get a tire blowout and you're in the middle of Iowa and you don't have any service on your phone and that's the only bill that you have and you can't get help and you just stand there on the road crying waiting till there's some nice good Samaritan to help you. It'll happen, but it takes a while.
Did you find seniors out of there on the road with you in this lifestyle, Melissa?
So many. And I did a lot of work for exchange programs rather than actual jobs because actual jobs were hard to find and working minimum wage. I'm staying in a state only for 5-6 days. That $7.25 is not enough for me. Even $9 an hour is not enough for me. If something happens to my van, which is my house, then you're pretty much at a loss and then you're really actually homeless. And you can't stay in a Walmart parking lot for 3 days with a broken car trying to figure out where you're going to get money next. So that's why doing the work for exchange was easier. So you make sure that you have food, you got a nice car. But there was a lot more elderly people doing that as well, which blew my mind because I'm 25 years old. I couldn't imagine being in my 50s, 60s, 70s. Some of these people that I met living a life like that. I struggled with it every single day while we were on the road. And that's what I chose to do because it was easier for me than finding a job down here. And I'd never seen anything. So I figured, why not get out and do it?
Melissa, we really appreciate your report. Just back from the road, this is exactly the kind of thing Jessica Bruder is writing about. And Jessica, you say that from a distance, you could mistake these people for carefree retired RVers. And of course, that's out there too. You know, we see these big, super luxurious RVs on the road. Has your eye been trained now to know the difference, Jessica, between, you know, someone living large, golden years, the fancy road life, and this hard scrabble, nomadic, seasonal employee life?
Yeah, I mean, you can tell. And what surprised me, too, is there's a fair amount of segregation. There are RV parks that will not let you stay if your rig is more than 10 years old, which includes the van I was out with on the road, by the way. So there are plenty of places that if I wanted to stay there wouldn't have me. I remember speaking with one woman who lives in a van. She's in her 70s, was at a bonfire talking to a lot of people in the desert, and everybody was enjoying themselves. And these people had super fancy rigs and no cares in the world. And then they asked her, oh, well, what do you live in? And when she said a van, they walked away from their own bonfire. And I kind of couldn't believe that. I mean, it was really sad.
They didn't want to hang out with the itinerant worker.
With the quote-unquote riffraff. I mean, it was really disgusting to me to hear that.
A lot of these who you say were formerly middle class, who are the ones, migrants really in a way, looking for a job, you say they washed their clothes at laundromats, joined fitness clubs to use the showers. Many took to the road after their savings were obliterated in the Great Recession. To keep their gas tanks and bellies full, they work long hours at hard physical jobs. In a time of flat wages and rising housing costs, they have unshackled themselves from rent and mortgages as a way to get by. They are, Jessica Bruder writes, surviving America. Alan is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Alan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You mentioned serfdom, and I think you kind of answered your own question, because I believe that in the advent of, like, AI and all of our labor shifting to retail, really, like, it doesn't really seem like freedom to me. It seems like the freedom for corporations to exploit people, because a system in which a bunch of elderly people are trying to drive around the country to work so that they can continue to drive around the country to work doesn't really sound like freedom to me. It just sounds like, you know, like she said, a Mad Max-style dystopia where you're competing for natural resources. So whether the answer be something like universal basic income or making absolute sure that AI stays out of our workforce, then I'm not really sure. But I favor those kinds of approaches.
Alan, I appreciate your call.
dystopia or something else? I mean, at moments, Jessica, you say it can feel like a glimpse of utopia here. Where's the line between the two? What are the two faces?
It's very fluid. I mean, it's amazing. There's so much adversity and there's so much these people are up against. But it's funny. I'm a Rebecca Solnit fan, and she has a book called A Paradise Built in Hell. And that book talks about the incredible communities that often spring up in the wake of natural disasters. And I'd say the economy is a man-made disaster, but you do get some incredible communities that speak really well of people, if not society as a whole, and their ability to provide mutual aid. So in a strange way, it's kind of a world within a world. It's a utopia that in some ways is brought about by dystopia, and really is just it's a small world of people caring for each other when a lot of the safety nets and other, you know, social forces one thought they could possibly rely on have faded away, and they've still got each other. So it's complicated.
Describe one of those, what you might have perceived as a utopian moment, Jessica.
Sure. I remember when a woman fell out of her van and broke her arm, and you know, it's hard enough to be down an arm when you are living in a house and you've got a lot of space to move around and maybe you've got roommates to help you. But this woman did not have any of those things. She was a work camper in the desert for the winter. And a couple other van dwellers set up what they called camp recovery. And they stuck with her until she was roadworthy again. You know, everything from tying her shoes to cooking meals. For me, that was really quite a beautiful thing to see.
I mean, it's beautiful, but it can be beautiful in a sort of Grapes of Wrath Steinbeck way. People with, you know, nothing to lose, banding together to live.
I'm not going to argue against that.
Tereska in Miami. Tereska, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you? I hope you're well. I think it sounds awesome. I have been given a great new retirement plan from your show today, so I'm so pleased about it. I think the idea of being able to work long past a kind of mandated age of retirement is so inspiring. It will keep you young. The idea of being able to live wherever you want sounds awesome. The idea of not being tied down to a system of, as you will, sticks and mortar, a bricks and mortar house, rent, mortgage, et cetera, until literally you die sounds so liberating. Obviously, the hardship stories that we've been hearing about are sad, but hardship can happen to anybody at any time. And hopefully, as this book comes out and people become more aware of it, hopefully our economy will be better structured to pay attention to our older citizens and give them the freedom to enjoy their lives right until they have no life left to enjoy.
So it sounds good to you, Tereska, and it sounds good to you again. Exactly why? Because freedom of the road, or what exactly?
Yeah, I mean, it's just you keep going. You keep going forever, and you do what you want, and you embrace life. You're not kind of like, oh, I'm a teller in a bank, and this is what I'm going to do until I'm 65 or 68, and then I have to be in retirement, and I'm going to live in the same house with the same mortgage, and I'm going to worry about finances, and there's no life to that life. This life is so exciting to me.
I appreciate your call, Tereska. Jessica, what do you say to that? Did you hear that vision of what's going on out there among those who are actually doing it?
It's a very sunny vision, and people do talk about the freedom of the road, but the idea, I think, that it would eliminate one's worries about expenses and stuff may be a little misguided. I saw a lot of worried about finances there, and often those worries are more immediate, like the earlier caller when she said, you know, if you get a flat tire and you don't have any money and you're in the middle of an area without reception, suddenly freedom starts to feel like something darker. So I think that might have been a little bit a little sunny side up. But I would agree that there are moments of freedom and a sense of empowerment. It's just I don't think it's that one sided.
You write that these people are neither powerless victims nor carefree adventurers. What do you mean?
Yeah, so it's funny. I think a lot of them are pretty wary of the media because they're used to either people saying,
oh, these are victims who are walking around in sackcloth and ashes and bemoaning their lot and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And or there's just the really shallow coverage that's like, hey, van life, it's glamorous. It's wonderful. But what they're living is very real. They're resilient. They're creative. And many of them have come out of a pretty hard time. So, again, they are complicated people and don't reduce well to either of those stereotypes.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. My guest is Jessica Bruder. Her new book is about Americans, itinerant Americans, migrants on the road doing seasonal work, and these are older Americans, by and large, living out of vans and RVs, camper trailers, cars, sedans, making ends meet, when really, for most of them, it's proven too tough to keep up with all the expenses of having a house and that whole life. Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century is Jessica's book. You can join us this hour. Could this be your solution when the time comes to make the numbers add up, to find a way to live? And could you picture yourself ending up on the road, a nomad, chasing regional, seasonal work as you age, to work in an Amazon warehouse or a Christmas tree place, or to pick beets, sugar beets, out in the cold? Is that for you? People responding online, Jessica, north of the border, says, sometimes I feel like I'm just a step away. A friend given to nomadic life described his converted SUV as his stealth camper because he could sleep in it wherever he wanted without drawing the attention of the police, asking him to find and pay for a campsite. Sam writes to us, no one should feel forced into this extreme measure of survival. Jessica has a question here. How do people get health insurance without a stable address? Do you have an answer to that one, Jessica?
So just about everybody has to have a stable address. And the funny thing is it makes it incredibly hard to just get any sense of how big this demographic is. I mean, I have guesses, but everybody seems to need a stable address, if only so these people can get driver's licenses, right? That's critical. They need driver's licenses. They need an address for tax purposes, for jury duty, you name it. So everybody's domiciled somewhere. Folks will use family members' addresses. They'll use P.O. boxes. They'll use mail forwarding services who will forward the mail wherever they roam. And it's funny. Some states really, really welcome these people. In North Dakota, if you so long as spend one night there and you get a motel receipt and you present it, you too can be a North Dakotan. It's incredible.
And what about the move along thing here? Our listener who says his friend sort of stealthily sleeps in his campsite of his SUV because it doesn't look like a camper. I mean, if they're shy on money, then just finding a place to put that RV or camper or van must be a budget item.
Yeah, stealth camping in and of itself is an entire art. It's something that when I've gone and listened to Bob Wells speak way out in the desert, there's a whole session on stealth camping and just how to do it without getting the dreaded knock, which would be a police officer coming to bang on your door and have you move along. He often recommends that you have a day camp and a night camp, a day camp where you're doing, you know, everything up until brushing your teeth, and a night camp where you go and all you do is sleep so you don't draw attention. Lots of people block out their windows with dark shades or reflectix, which looks like kind of a cross between Mylar and bubble wrap. Lots of people, you know, people talk about should you crack the window, you don't want condensation together on the windshield. There are all sorts of little details. Other people like to make their vans look like handyman's vehicles so they can park within what would look like a utility fleet. I mean, there are all sorts of ways to do this urban camouflage that are pretty incredible.
And all this is to avoid the cost of paying for a parking place,
Particularly in an era where so many municipalities are criminalizing what they consider homelessness, making it illegal to sleep in your car, which in my mind is really an indictment of our values as a society. It's saying, you know, this spot is good enough for your car, but not if you're in it.
I mean, wow, yeah.
In my mind, that really says that property is valued over people in a way that I find fairly scary. But yeah, a lot of people don't have the income to pay for hookups at an RV park each night. Most people I know in this demographic are not doing that.
Badger in Nashville. Thanks for calling, Badger. You're on the air with Jessica Bruder.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been on the road myself now for over 25 years. September 17th was my anniversary of giving up my career after they bombed Iraq back to the Stone Age the first time, and I figured I could no longer create a taxable income to pay for that kind of thing. So I hit the road with a van load of artwork and a dog, and I set up my art all over the country and preached, you know, against war, et cetera. And sometimes I would take, you know, temporary jobs. But then the van broke down and me and the dog started walking, and I would just sell art on the streets, which, you know, sometimes sold things, sometimes not. You know, and sometimes I'd eat out of dumpsters and camping, you know, in the woods where you can find a safe place, either from, you know, thugs looking for the homeless or whatever to beat up, or the police, you know, with the move on, you can't sleep here kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the last 15 years of this trip I've been on a bicycle, and which, you know, I'm turning 60 on Saturday, and it's getting harder and harder to hop on my bicycle and, you know, ride to New Orleans for the winter, to Florida or wherever.
Yeah. Do you feel a community out there, Badger, or are you on your own?
Well, that's the thing. You know, the streets are filled with people that have no place to be, and I like, you know, I don't believe I'm homeless. People say, well, are you homeless? I say, well, no, thank you very much. I live on planet Earth. which, you know, I've been arrested and threatened for arrest for the crime of sleeping. I've been arrested and jailed for trying to sell my art on the street. They say I have to have a permit, and I usually tell them I'm a veteran of the Marine Corps, and I was sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and the First Amendment gives me the right freedom of expression and public assembly. But then they just call me smartass and arrest me anyway.
Badger, we've got so, it, and we wish you luck out there. Turning 60, 25 years on the road, that's a long time, but we hear how you've worked your way into the life, and with a political motivation from the outset. We acknowledge that as well, and I appreciate your call from Nashville. Thank you. James in Lake Worth, Florida. James, you're on.
Yes, very interesting subject. You know, as far as recreational vehicle and people do it when they're younger, people do it when they're older, and some people are forced into it. And
how about
and
you, James? What's your story?
Well, my story is that when the economy crashed, I used up all my 401k just to keep my house, and yeah. Work, you know, wasn't there. So right now I'm at that stage to where I have to rent the house out, and I'm moving into an RV, and I do have a couple of acres in Live Oak, Florida, so I plan on living in my motorhome and kind of like going up there
is it a choice then, James, or do you feel forced onto this path?
Well, you know what, I've done this before. Me and my wife, my ex-wife, back when I was younger, I have four boys and they're all done, you know, they're all off on their own. But, we actually had, auto Winnebago, and we traveled around the country and worked, but this is back when I was younger, back in the '70s, and, I enjoyed it. And so this isn't new to me, and I know where I'm going, but yes, I am kind of forced into it because I am living off of Social Security, and which is $1,500 a month.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like what I kind of have to do. So yeah, I am being forced into it, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like me in the same situation.
James, we wish you luck with it. We really do, and I appreciate your call. Jessica, let me get one more right here, if I may. Jeff in Roanoke, Virginia. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show. Really enjoying it. I started listening when she was talking about the environment there in the factory, how it felt like a prison. and really fascinating topic. But I feel like Jessica's really underplaying the concept of what you just mentioned, that this is a choice. This is a choice twofold. Number one, that these folks didn't plan and prepare for their future, or they made choices at that time when they were younger. And secondly, that they're choosing to live this kind of lifestyle and to do this kind of work. And I feel like the author's kind of portraying it, painting a picture as this is an injustice happening to these people. And I find that a little disconcerting about this topic.
But, Jeff, I mean, we just had a call. You may have heard the caller from Florida just now, James, who said, well, it's a choice, but he's forced into this choice. He doesn't feel it's not what he would like to do. He had to use up his 401k to hang on to his house in the recession, and now he said he's forced to make this choice. What do you say to that?
You know, he did say that, and he only provided us with just a few short details.
Yeah.
So I can't make a judgment on such limited information regarding his particular situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all of us, and it's part of the American experience to experience troubles and hardships, and we were all part of the economy that tanked for a while there. And again, Tom, I have to trace it back to choices. It's choices that we make are the largest factor in determining who we are, where we are, where we're going, and where we end up.
Maybe ending up out on the road. Jeff, I appreciate your call right there. Jessica Bruder's new book is Nomad Land, and we're talking about that life. American seniors, nomads, doing seasonal work, itinerant work on the road. Jessica, you hear, you know, Jeff there saying, look, this is a choice, or it's about choices and kind of personal responsibility. Got other views coming in online, though. Here's a woozy canary says, half the population has essentially nothing saved up for retirement. Most people don't have enough money in savings to get through the next few months if their income stopped. And this listener says, the inevitable results of Reaganomics. Do you put a political frame on this, Jessica? Or do you say, this is American freedom and life is tough sometimes? How do you frame this up?
Well, you know, people say, oh, they can pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But to me, that's the latest incarnation of let them eat cake. I mean, we have an incredibly unequal economy. The so-called personal responsibility crusade is part of how we got here. And I think it's nice and easy to say that from the comfort of your living room. But frankly, you know, we can't teach empathy.
You say a lot of these work campers, RVs, look like mobile apothecaries, drugstores. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So this was particularly when I was interviewing people who worked for Amazon, and they were, you know, experiencing all sorts of ailments, and this is hard on older bodies. So everything from trigger finger and other tendon conditions to plantar fasciitis to randomly passing out in the warehouse and having to get rushed to the hospital in an ambulance to getting knocked out because they're hit in the head with a cardboard box coming off a conveyor belt. So these RVs, you'd see all sorts of ibuprofen, Aleve, little tubs for bathing tired feet with Epsom salts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really was pretty incredible.
Holding it together. Ron in Lebanon, Ohio. Ron, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Just a bit of a different viewpoint. My wife and I have been full-time RVers for 3.5 years now.
Yes.
Sold our house by choice because we didn't have any real ties to it.
Sure.
And just saw freedom of getting out there. We're very fortunate in that we're able to not have to work camp right now. Could happen in the future. I just turned 65, but I'm certainly not opposed to working at a campground.
Yeah.
For the free rent and a small wage.
Wait, so Ron, you've got enough put back that you don't have to work as you're on the road. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, between our small, Social Security and small retirements, and we cut our expenses at least one third when we sold the house.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of, even though we have a small RV payment and we pay for campgrounds on occasion, and currently we're in Ohio near where our family is, so we're at a full hookup campground. But long-term stays run you about $20 a night. So it's mm-hmm. much more savings than doing it at any other temporary way.
Yeah.
We were finding the average of most campgrounds are about $40 a night for short-term stays. But when we're traveling, we do a lot of free camping on BLM and Forest Service land, or occasionally at a friend's ranch. And then when we're wintering in Arizona, we're able to get a long-term stay at a park for a reasonable cost. But so our income matches that. I tell people that, hey, I was working paycheck to paycheck sitting in a cubicle. Now I kind of work paycheck to paycheck or get my paychecks that way, and now I see national parks. So while I feel fortunate about that, there certainly are a lot of work campers out there. We meet a lot of them. But I got to say, the vast majority of the work campers I've met, whether it's for Amazon or work camping at campgrounds or national parks, they're doing it strictly by choice because they love it, not necessarily because they had to.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly live cheaper on the road than they do in a house. Some still have houses, and they do it seasonally. But the full-time RVers we run into, their work campers, by and large, they're happy with their choice.
Ron, yeah. We've got it. There's a report right from the front line, not having to work right now, but watching others who do. Jessica, what about Ron's judgment of the bottom line here? I mean, there's resilience. You write about that. There's a spirit of optimism.
There's pride. And you've got Amazon sending out newsletters that say things like camper force the value of friendship. But having spent time in a warehouse and interviewing dozens of people there, anybody who tells you with a straight face that working long shifts in a warehouse for Amazon doing pick and pack before Christmas is fun, mm-hmm. or a fitness program, or how lucky we are that we get to stay active, is spinning you, and sometimes spinning themselves.
You say that people express hope in the short term. What about the long-term view of this life on the road?
A lot of people don't really know what the long term holds. I've actually seen, unfortunately, a few people I spoke with early in the project are no longer with us, and they passed away out on the road. So while I'm hoping the best for everyone, and some will move with families and find other solutions, it's not easy.
Jessica Bruder's book is Nomad Land, Surviving America in the 21st Century, and she takes us right out on the road with the work campers, the nomads of contemporary America. Jessica, thank you very much for spending some time with us today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Jessica Bruder, Nomad Land. Who knows? You may be part of it one day. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.